You can't be serious, man. You cannot be serious!
Now, Don, on the line, we have one of the great success stories in Australian business. And I'm not going to mention who we're speaking to until I read out just who this person is. And we really appreciate him coming on the line. He's an Australian businessman and an historian in the field of biohistory, which I think is the rise and fall of civilizations and social change. He has self-published books on human culture and eugenics. He might tell us what eugenics is. He funds a laboratory at the La Trobe University. He's an evangelical Christian, and his politics, he says, he is a conservative liberalism is his politics. Which probably means he's not a fan of the current Labor government in Victoria. We'll get onto that in a minute. His name is David Penman, but he's better known as Jim Penman of Jim's Mowing, which is one of his franchises. And he has, of the Jim's group, he has probably the biggest franchise business in Australia with over 50 franchises. And he's on the line now. Welcome to You Cannot Be Serious, Jim.
Yeah, good morning. Can I just...
Yes.
We've got nearly 5,000 franchises, not 50, but also...
Really?
My study is about eugenics, which is genetics. It's about epigenetics, which is about the way you turn genes on or off. Eugenics sounds like selective breeding, and I don't go into that at all. Epigenetics.
And what's the laboratory you're funding at Monash University?
At La Trobe,
we're
looking at the effects of mild food restriction, which are extremely beneficial at so many levels, and we're looking at a way of developing treatments that can have the same effect, which would have a big implication for the treatment of things like drug addiction and alcoholism, for example.
And it said at various stages here, you test mice and you test on rodents to see if the effects of any of these things are deleterious to human health, I presume. And at one stage, I think, Jim, you said that Elon Musk wouldn't understand exactly what experiments you were doing at the university.
I'm not sure what that means, actually. Elon Musk is a very smart guy, but we work with rats. As I said, what we do is restrict them to very mild food restriction and looking at the effects on their physiology, the proteins, cytokines, the effects on the epigenome. We're looking at how it changes them, which is in many ways beneficial. They actually live a lot longer and they're healthier. What we want to do is to try and reproduce that effect with a drugs or treatment of some kind that can help humans to live a better, healthier life.
So your name is actually David, isn't it?
Well, legally speaking, yes. David J.
And you, how did you turn your extraordinarily successfully company into Jim's, the Jim's Group? Where did Jim come from?
Well, I've been called Jim since I left school. I went to work on a farm when I left school, and the other young guy working there was called David. So I said, yeah, call me Jim. I got used to it, and I like it.
We're calling you Jim. So, Jim, I said you had 50 different franchises. You said you have 5,000.
Yep. 5,000 franchisees or close to.
About
45 divisions. Yeah, that's right.
That's right. I was going to read some of them out. There is 50-odd. One of them... Probably, I know it started with Jim's Mowing, and that started when you decided you'd charge people to mow their lawn, and when franchising came into existence in Australia, or I think in 1988, you took it to a whole new level, and you have over 50 different franchises. One of them was Jim's Jumping Castles. Would that be the least patronised franchise in the whole business?
Yeah, it's only got one franchise currently. They started before COVID and just hit by that. So, look, about our 45 divisions, only 25 have got sort of more than 30 franchisees, which is our benchmark for success. And there's a number of new ones that look very promising, but not every division we try works out amazingly well.
But you are you not, Jim? You are very strict about who is a franchisee, what are their chances of success. They have to toe a line that you draw in the sand about quality and competence. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. We try and be very selective, and we have very tough systems of, we monitor complaints very carefully. We get ratings from customers. We give people star ratings. So if people don't do what they're supposed to do, then there's some fairly tough sanctions come into play. But it's for the sake of the business, but it's also for their sake, because we know that franchisees who give great customer service are far more likely to succeed and report good income.
So I'm not delving into your personal life, Jim, but it does the whole hell of a lot of chat is about how much money you turn. It says you turn over $1 billion a year, and you have 35,000 clients. Is any of that accurate, or is that just rumor?
We don't exactly know what our franchisees turn over because our system doesn't require us to know their income. We think it would probably be close to $1 billion a year in terms of turnover. In terms of clients, no, there'd be a lot more than that. Last year, we would have picked up maybe 600,000 leads from clients.
Holy mackerel.
And we actually knocked back 287,000 leads because we couldn't cope with them. In many divisions, we just don't have nearly enough franchises. In fact, in most divisions, particularly ones like mowing and fencing and dog wash and those ones.
So it says that when you start up, you keep the startup costs of the business fairly low, and you don't take a percentage of turnover or sales of your clients. What they've said you're worth, Jim, between then, well, you'll love this. They've said you're worth between $10 and $100 million. How do you become successful at doing that, managing 50 different franchises?
Well, what my business is worth is a matter of what somebody would pay for it. So I guess probably somebody, but I don't intend to sell it, so it doesn't really matter. It's more a case of the ongoing income. But yeah.
So if I wanted to start up a Jim's franchise of whatever, what would I be required to do? How would I convince you that I could be one of your employees?
The actual cost could be as little as $10,000, or it could be up to something like $250,000 for one like Kippins, where you have to buy your own truck and all the rest of the equipment. But the typical is about $25,000 to $30,000.
And you don't take a percentage of my, if I was had clients, you don't take a percentage of what my turnover is. I just pay an upfront fee, and you advertise and promote the business on behalf of all your clients.
We take an ongoing flat rate fee. And also what we call lead fees. So for every lead that you receive, a typical franchisee would probably pay about $750 per month, which is roughly speaking about 6% of turnover. But it's not calculated that way. But the most successful ones could be turning over, you know, $1 million+ a year, and then their fees are a fraction of a percent. So it really depends on what your turnover is.
So you're an incredible success story, Jim. You say your success was born out of Jim's group was born out of a series of bad decisions, personal failings, and rip-offs. What does that mean? How did you get into starting up Jim's Mowing, which I think was the first franchise, and then blossoming into the 50 others because of bad decisions, personal failings, and rip-offs?
Well, I didn't succeed because of bad decisions. I succeeded despite them. I've done a lot of very stupid things. I've gone into businesses I knew nothing about, like a holiday resort at one time, a trade exchange, started to do a factory to build our trailers. There's a number of things that I've done which I should not have done. But all the same, the business is obviously grown and flourished over the years despite my mistakes. But we all make mistakes in business. If you don't make mistakes, you're not trying new things. You just try and learn not to make the same mistakes repeatedly.
The biggest risk in life, Jim, is not to take a risk at all.
You are dead right on that one.
Jim, your business, is it Australia-wide?
Yes, we're in Australia and New Zealand, and we've got about 60 in Canada.
And it also fascinates me, timing. I think timing's important. Did the business actually start off by you mowing lawns and you taking, I suppose, when you started, we seem to be asset rich now as a society and time poor. Did you take advantage of that?
Well, there's always been a business in that area. I started as a student in the 70s. In fact, I've actually done gardening since I was 8 years old. Almost all my life I've been involved in the industry in some way or other. But look, there's always demand. There's actually a huge demand out there for good service. That's what we find. We find that the demand from the public, I mean, it's always been strong. It's become much stronger for us in recent years, but I think that's mainly because our standards of work have so much better than they used to be. Our complaints are fraction of what they used to be, even in the early days of the franchise. And that's better service to customers. Their reputation builds and people find it easier to find work. So the volume of leads rises. But the demand out there is extraordinary.
And where do you come up with these ideas? Because I did read recently you're into brewing. Is that right? And because of the colour of the label or something, you ran across somebody else who was also brewing.
We're not brewing. We just actually contacted a company, which is Bondi Brewers, who make the beer. I don't make the mistake of going into things I don't know, but we just put our label on it. And then Cooper said that the round circle on the label is too much like this, which is pretty ridiculous, because how could you mistake lawn lager for whatever Cooper's makes?
How was that going, incidentally? I noticed that Cooper's had got a bit edgy about all that. How is that going?
Oh, that's okay. I mean, it's not a big thing for us. Probably if we needed to, we'd redesign the labels. But I mean, we've actually sold out. We did it with one as a test, and then that sold out very quickly. And I think we've done two more since then.
If some of your franchisees get criticised for whatever, whether it be, I don't know, the job not doing it properly or bad service or not being punctual or whatever, do you then personally get in touch with those people and ask them to toe the line or say their franchise might be in jeopardy if they don't improve?
Well, we've got nearly 5,000 franchisees, so I couldn't do it personally. But each franchisee has a franchisor who's like their business coach. They respond to them, they run meetings, they ring them regularly. And that franchisor is responsible for actually coaching them, saying, okay, why did you not turn up when you said you would? Next time, please make sure, ring the client, text the client, let them know. Just those kind of things. But you have a system which is basically based on the computer.
So it monitors
of the service.
And so I've got a feeling, Jim, that you don't tolerate mediocrity. In fact, I think you once said that wrath was your weakness. You have a fairly short fuse, and if people don't toe the line.
Well, not so much they don't toe the line. It's when they start arguing with me or something like that, I can get a little bit stroppy. I often have a practice when somebody emails with me, I do a response and I think, is this actual response actually going to help? I have to try and control that sort of thing. I'm pretty intense about things like, I actually get more upset about, the thing I get most upset about is when franchisors don't look after franchisees correctly. That was really, really upset me. Because in reality, it's not the clients who get their lawns mowed and their houses cleaned is our first most important client. It's the franchisees themselves. They're my key clients.
So this was well documented, Jim, but you fired your sister, I believe. I'm not sure how that relationship's going, but you fired your sister for some reason. Why did that come about?
I offered her a job basically as a way of getting her back into the country because my mother was dying and Jill and Mum were pretty close. So I said, if you have a job, if it doesn't work out, I'll write off any debt for you. You know, getting her back, it cost me about $20,000 to do that. And so I gave her a job and she just wasn't very good at it. And I changed, I tried something else and something else. I tried several different jobs, and she was just awful. And it was demoralizing at the start. Because if you put somebody on who's a family member who's not doing well, it puts pressure on us. They think, well, you know, I'm working hard, and here's somebody because he's the boss's sister. So I couldn't, in the end, let her go.
So were you on speaking terms with her as we at this stage?
No, I am not.
Jim, through COVID, you were quite outspoken. Was that resolved about the fact that your work or franchisees couldn't work when we could see other council workers working? Did you take that any further, or is it just a bit of a one-off publicity thing and it went nowhere? Or did you get into trouble? Any ramifications?
No. The government's not that powerful. They don't assassinate critics like they do in Russia or something like that. Look, it was important to do it. We're still fighting it, actually. We've got a test case going through the court. We lost in to actually asking the government for compensation for one particular franchisee's test. Because the government's own law says, the state government says, you cannot deprive a person of their livelihood without good reason. So we went to the court and we said, okay, government, what was your reason for putting 100,000 plus independent contractors out of work? Their answer was, we didn't have to tell you the reason. We had a good reason, but we didn't have to tell you about it, which is pretty stupid if you think about it. So we're actually pursuing that through the Supreme Court. But the main reason we're doing this, though, it's not a matter of revenge for the past. Yeah. It's because the next time something like this happens, and it will happen again, we don't do stupid, damaging things. We actually act in a sensible way, using medical advice, using scientific advice, and don't just do something because it's politically helpful to the Premier.
Are you encouraged by what's happened in the towers at Flemington, where those people have been offered $5 million by the state government?
Yeah, well, I don't necessarily want to send the state government bankrupt by claiming it, but I just want to establish the principle that you don't deprive people of their work without good reason.
But
Pepe had no reason for what he did. There was no valid scientific reason. It didn't help. It didn't save a single life.
Yeah, no,
but it caused so much suffering and so much loss.
We actually spoke about that in a previous episode just that we've had on this morning about how useless all those decrees and edicts were about the COVID vaccine and what the restrictions were. But it is ludicrous, is it not, Jim, that council workers, to Don's point, could go about mowing lawns and nature strips and everything on behalf of the council, but individual franchisees of yours could not go and mow someone's lawn. It just seemed so illogically stupid, that.
Yes. I think in a way we probably might. Look, the Premier figure, when he said this, the original guidelines for Health and Human Services actually said that independent, individual contractors could work by themselves. No change public health. So careful advice from the Premier's own government said this. And he gets up at a press conference the following Wednesday and says you can't get your lawns mowed on your houses clean. Now, that wasn't based on any advice. That was because he thought, this might be helping me politically. It might give me a few more votes. It might cost a few damage. But who are these scumbags, independent operators? They're probably not going to vote for me anyway. They're probably independent businesses. So who cares about them? All he was concerned about was his own supporters, the affluent, inner suburban, wealthy, the lawyers and the bankers and the public servants who can't get their lawns mowed and their houses clean. Don't care about the poor people who lost their jobs because they couldn't do those jobs.
We are in vehement agreement with you, Jim. Probably this is why we're speaking to you. There's a lot of interest in your wealth. I'm not asking you about it, but you said by nature you're a very frugal man, and I think you said that it's not healthy to live a life of luxury. It's almost an abuse of society. Are you careful with your money, Jim?
Yes, I am. I'm always talking about switching off light, turning off the heat when it's coming stuff. So I have a constant battle with my family, even things like, I don't believe it's good for society. I don't believe it's good for individuals either. You know, there's a lot of research on this, and I'm very interested in this subject. Having a lot more money makes a lot less difference to your happiness than people think. And one thing in particular, if you spend money on status goods, like expensive cars and houses and luxury holidays and all this kind of stuff to expensive wine, it actually doesn't have any effect on your well-being at all. If you spend money on experiences, like going out to dinner with friends, that's somewhat more positive. The best thing you can do with money is to give it away to a cause that you're involved with, which is what I do with my research. But too much money is destructive. It's destructive of children too. I've never wanted my children to grow up to be spoiled trust fund kids.
So is that what eugenics is about, or the biohistory of social change? Is that what eugenics is about?
No, it's not eugenics. That's what Nazis do. I'm not in favour of eugenics.
I see.
Epigenetics is what happens is if you bring up a child in luxury and you don't ask them to, you don't put any demands on them, you just say life is easy, you have everything you want. What you have is an epigenetic change. It actually changes the way their genes function. It turns on or off certain genes in a way that they lose character. They have less conscience. They're not as hardworking. They're soft. They're filthy.
So you have...
We want to change that. It's an epigenetic change. It's a change to the... It's a change of the environment.
So you have 11 kids, Jim, I think. I think I read that. Do they do it tough, Jim? Do you make them you make them toe the line before they ask you for things?
Well, basically, yes. They're just normal middle-class kids. I give them a little bit of help with housing because it's very hard to buy a house these days. But they're brought up in very normal situations. But they know some theoretic level that we're quite well off. But they don't see any evidence of it.
So in every industry, in every walk of life, you have critics. I'm not sure how people could find a criticism of you, Jim. I don't even know. I've never met you. But the critics said that you had too many franchises to oversee properly, which must make you laugh when you consider we've just discussed you've got a $1 billion turnover. How do you keep abreast of all the technological changes that your franchisees need to adapt to in the changing world?
Well, technology is a great asset. Like I said, our level of complaints, measured complaints, has dropped to a fraction of what it used to be because we've got better and better technology. We spent something like $5 million a year on software development. We are hugely invested in that area. It's actually extremely helpful. By every measure, we do better. We do better in terms of customer service. We also do better in terms of the income of our franchisees. Now, we don't measure it directly, but, for example, 10 years ago, when we did a franchisee survey, which is an anonymous annual confidential survey, something like 14% of franchisees reported poor income. Latest figures, 8%. So by every measure, we do better. We look at things like attrition rate. You know, if you go into business as independent, cleaning, gardening, those sort of things, look it up on the internet. Between 90 and 95% of those businesses will not last the first year, okay? With us, it's 12%. That's the difference that we can do. And the better we can do, the better training, the better support, the better technology, the more likely we are to give great service and the more likely we are to have our franchisees succeed.
Is your great passion in life just working for your franchisees? Are you a workaholic? Are you a 24/7 man on the job? I notice, and I respect this, and we really respect you speaking to us, but you would not come into the studio because you said that would be half a day that you'd lose by travelling in and travelling back. So you're just a 24/7 man.
Not in terms of work, no. Necessarily. For one thing I do is I drive my son to school, my 13-year-old son to school, every day and take him back. So I spend 3 hours a week on average talking to him about all kinds of things like that. I've got time for my family. I'm going to see my grandson and two of my children with their partners today. Work isn't everything. I have multiple passions, actually. I have three passions. I have my research. I have my gym's family, my franchisees, and I have my own family. And all of this matter. Time is valuable.
Where did you get the logo of the rank and file man with the beard and the bucket hat on that I think you changed when you became Jim's group? But where did you get that logo from?
That's me. If you actually Google Jim Penman images, you'll see a picture of me with a beard and a hat against the old logo. That's actually the picture it was taken from. They do a graphical representation of that. I had a beard until 23 years ago, when I shaved it off because I was single at the time and it was going grey and didn't want to look too old. That was me.
What did that hampered you in the romantic stakes, Jim?
Having a
beard and going grey.
When you're 48 years old, you do not need to look any older.
Well, Jim, you've had like me, you've been married four times. Have you? You're still looking, or you've decided that you're just no good at it?
I've been very happily married 22 years now, and I love my wife. I'm crazy about her, and vice versa. We've got a wonderful, wonderful marriage. I just had to find somebody decent enough, somebody moral enough, somebody strong enough to put up with me. But I love my wife.
Do you ever take her on any holidays, Jim?
Well, not a lot. I'm not a big traveller. My form of creation is going out to my farm and digging and planting nuts and farming vegetables and this kind of thing too. I'm not into luxury.
Now, could I say that this really started by me and Don, or Don and I? We were sitting here and I was looking at some Twitters, I'm not good at this at all, and Instagram, and it came up Gymland. And I thought, what's Gymland? And it was about you wanting to start your own nation or own. And I said to Don here opposite me, I said, I tell you what, I wouldn't mind joining Gymland because I wasn't too keen on what's going on in this state. So how did that start? And this is a tongue-in-cheek thing, is it, or not?
Yeah, it's an April Fool joke. That was all it was. We do it every year. One year we're going to start an airline. One year we're going to buy King Island and rename it as Jim's Island. So we always think of some stunt every year, but it actually worked out amazingly well. The lefties, so many of them actually took it seriously. That was amazing to me. They thought this 8-hectare site in suburban Melbourne thinks it's going to actually secede from Australia, which is
totally Jim, I took it seriously. I thought I'd like to join Gymland.
It's not possible. Even Prince Leonard of Hutt River couldn't actually go independent. Of course not. But we've got a lot of fun, you know. I've got a crown and a cape and a scepter and uniting people. We're actually raising money for Men's Church, which is a fantastic cause. So if you want to become a citizen of Gymland, $20, and we'll give you a certificate of citizenship. If you want to give us $150 to Men's Church, then I'll knight you.
I tell you what, Jim, I'm happy to put this on the record. I don't know how, but you can tell me. I'm going to send you $150. In fact, I'll join Don and I will send you $300 if you'll send us a picture of us with a crown on our head or whatever you have to do. And if you could tell me how I join Jim's Land, tell me.
Go in through the website, www.jims.net, and you'll see the links in there so you can actually do it. It's a fantastic cause, Men's Shed. We've done our own flag, we've got our own stamp, we've got all kinds of stuff.
Fantastic.
It's great fun.
Do you ever have a get-together or a get-together with a Christmas party or whatever with any of your franchisees or the more important ones, if there's such a thing as more important franchisees?
All my franchisees are important.
Of course they are, Jim. It's a silly question.
We're having on... I think it's Saturday week. We've got a big trade day at the showgrounds in Melbourne. So we're going to have thousands of people coming there with franchisees and members of the public and, you know, food and all kinds of things and display stands. And there's going to be a gala dinner which franchisees and franchisors are invited to.
Jim, where do you come up with the ideas? Is it you or have you got a staff and they run them past you?
For new divisions, actually, mostly come from people who are independent. They just come from, amongst our franchisees. Like one of my franchisees contacted me recently and said, you know, what about starting up Jim's Beauty, which is like beauty services to women. Another one wants to do Jim's Remedial Massage. This is just two of our franchisees, happens to be in the laundry division, who had these ideas and we're going through the process and we're going to give them a go.
I've got them all written down here. To read 50 out of them in. Jim's tree stump removal, uniforms, window cleaning, window tinting, test and tag, rims, dent, scratch and dent, Jim's traffic control, Jim's stump removal, signs, prints, skip bins. I mean, it is just people just giving you ideas and wanting to have the great name of Jim's group on their franchise because they think that's what that shows quality and integrity.
Well, what they do is they have some background in the industry. They know what they're talking about. So we're very good at franchising, customer service, contract software. That's our expertise. But I don't personally know how to go in and do pest control or do set up a digital TV system. So we have people who have expertise in that area. They come in, they start a franchise using our system. And because of our reputation and because of the marketing and we actually tend to be successful. But having said that, you know, not all of our new divisions work. You know, you just mentioned, what was the one you mentioned, traffic control. It's got one franchisee. It really hasn't worked out very well. You've got to have the right idea, but most effectively, you've got to have the right person driving it. That's what really makes it work.
So you were born in England? You're an Englishman, are you?
No, I'm not. And I'm an Aussie.
You're born here.
No, I was born in England.
Yeah, no, I
came out when I was three. It doesn't. If I would happen to be, my parents happened to be in Antarctica, would not make me a penguin. I'm Australian.
No, Jim, I wasn't suggesting you weren't. I was just saying you were born in England and came out here. And the success story, what you have done is remarkable. Considering I've got a feeling that your main passion, as we said at the start, is really about. I'm sorry, I got eugenics mixed up with Nazism. I didn't mean to do that, Jim. But the biohistory of what you do is probably your main passion, and this is just if you can believe it or not, with 50 different franchises, a sideline.
Yeah, well, the effort, I did a PhD. I intend to be an academic. And when my ideas were considered too radical for any sort of academic post, I decided I needed to do a research institute to fund one so I could actually continue research and follow the implications of my theory. So I need a lot of money. But I didn't really want money for myself. I just wanted it for my research.
So, I presume you do you have any stresses in life? Is the pressure of business what you thrive on, or are you generally pretty relaxed?
I have enormous fun. I doubt there's a happier man on the face of the earth than me.
Really?
I've got a wife, a wonderful business, great staff, great franchisees, great franchisors, great people in my research institute. I'm surrounded by a lot of really, really wonderful people.
And Jim, what are you worth?
Oh, who knows?
How long's a piece of string?
Well, look, if I wanted to try and sell my business, then somebody would tell me what the value of the business is. But the fact of the matter is I wouldn't sell my business because then you get some greedy multinational company coming in and saying, how much can we rip off the franchisees? I would never do it. I would not want to become a public company. I would not want to sell. I've got another 20, 25 years based on what Google says in terms of life expectancy, and I've set up a system with a family trust, and my family will be in control. And it'll be in trust for the research institute. That's basically what it's for.
And just finally, are you a believer? It says you're an evangelical Christian. Are you a churchgoer, or are you, you just do that privately?
No, I'm an active member of my local church. I run a life group and I volunteer in various ways. Yeah, I'm a Christian.
Well, David Jim Penman, you're an absolute star and a great Australian success story, and we really appreciate you speaking to us. I'm telling you, if I can work out how to find the website, we're sending you $300 and we want to be part of Jimland, and we want the mythical crown to be given to us so that we can wear it with pride. So we really appreciate you speaking to us on You Cannot Be Serious, Jim.
All right. Thanks to both of you.
All the best. Thank you. We'll just make sure Jim's not on the phone. So thank you very much for that. Spurs, he's not on the line. Doesn't matter if he is. He's not on. I don't think he's on the line. Doesn't matter if he is, John, as I said. That is what Nick's success story. That man is. When you consider that that wasn't really probably what he wanted to do in the first place. It just was born out of
opportunity,
and
timing.
He's smart enough to know how to make
capitalize
it work
on an opportunity.
Jim Penman, fantastic! What a star. Now, will we keep chatting, or will we will we speak about? We've already told it that I've stuffed things up at the start of this. Will we keep going, or will we come back and do a second, a third lot? You making the decision, Don? Please, I think we should let Jim stand on his own, and we'll come back.
Because